Marvel's Jessica Jones, Season 1, Episode 13, a.k.a. Smile, is over, but we're just getting started here on Post Show Recaps. Hello, everybody. I'm Josh Wigler, a.k.a. I'm smiling because Kevin Mahadeo owes me a beer.
I owe you a beer. I have in my notes, I wrote it down when it happened, so, well, I owe Josh a beer.
Yes, awesome, awesome, awesome. Well, listen, you've been talking about how clairvoyant you've been all season long, and I was bound to get one.
You were about to get one, and it's actually, you know, it's funny because, like, thinking about it, I didn't predict this, but I did discuss, we could talk more about it, like, the parallel between, or the opposite approach with Daredevil in this, like, whereas I feel Daredevil was about him, you know, he wanted to kill him, and he did learn that he didn't have to. This was Jessica not wanting to kill Kilgrave and then have to kill him. So, you know, there's an interesting parallel there that I kind of really like. And we can discuss, obviously, the repercussions of that that big ending, you know, when we talk about it. But, yes. But either way, I owe you a beer.
Yeah, yeah. Stop trying to, like, talk around the fact that you owe me a beverage.
Yeah, I was wrong. David Tennant's gone. It makes me sad.
it makes me really happy. I'm really happy because I have a free drink and also because that dude deserved it. Really yeah. hard. Really.
But there is something else I called happening. Night Nurse. From episode, whenever it was that they went to the hospital for the first time, I was like, oh, Night Nurse.
Yeah.
And it was during the day, but now it was at night, so I'm like, oh, Night Nurse is definitely showing up, and she did.
Yeah, that was great. It was great to see Rosario Dawson back in the mix, Claire Temple back in the mix. We saw her a lot on Daredevil. We were crushing pretty hard on her on Daredevil.
Yeah.
Here she is on Jessica Jones. Better late than never, but I will say that it kind of made me feel like I just wish that we had her this entire season, because she was so great in this episode.
No, she's great. It makes me wonder, though, like, is she going to be the Agent Coulson of the Netflix shows? Like,
I think,
is she just going to be the one that appears over and over again?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know.
They already confirmed she's in Luke Cage, I think. I remember reading that somewhere.
I saw something recently about, I saw a press release about Rosario Dawson, Claire Temple's mother, was going to be a character on Luke Cage, and I assume that that would mean that Claire Temple is going to be a character on Luke Cage as well. So that's fun. That's great. I'm very happy about that. But really, when she showed up and she was so great in this episode, I was like, why has she not been here this whole time? She's so good.
Yeah, she's great, and I love the references they made. I will say I was a little... I kept being like, man, you know, it'd be great if Matt Murdock showed up right now. Like, there was a couple times where I'm just like, oh, man, it'd be great if Matt showed up or something. But, he did it. I didn't necessarily even mean showing up as Daredevil. Like, you know, there's one specific instance at the end where I'm like, I wish that was Matt and not the person that it was, because F the person that it was, but we'll get to that,
okay.
I'm sure.
Well, raise your hand when we get there. I'm not sure I know what you're talking about yet.
But, okay.
I'm sure it'll be good. If it's a Kevin Rant, then you know we're in business. And there ought to be at least one Kevin Rant in here. This is the final podcast of the Jessica Jones series here on Post Show Recaps. Kevin, once upon a time... Not the show. Once upon a time, you and I thought that we were only going to do a few of these, that we weren't going to be able to do one for every single episode. But we made it. We maintained our schedule. We took an intentional skip day on Thanksgiving. But other than that, we hit every single weekday. Bravo. I'm proud of us. It's patsying myself on the shoulder right now.
I do love that he says it's Patsy.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's Patsy.
But yeah, no, I'm very happy that we did this. I'm happy that we worked our schedule to do it. It was so much fun. I'm really glad we got to do this.
All right, so let's not eulogize this thing totally quite yet. We got to finish up the story. We got to finish up the recap of this episode, season finale. We had been a little thumbs down on some of the things that had happened on Jessica Jones recently, especially with the big turning point of episode 10. Here we are. The season's over. Without even looking back at the season as a whole, what did you just think of this episode as a finale, Kevin?
I liked it. I think at the end of the day, I did like it as a finale. I think it was cool that they tied into a greater aspect, you know, the greater aspect of the Marvel TV universe. I don't know what to call it there. MTVU.
I think it's still the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but if you want to call it the
smaller version of it, you know, the TV version of the cinematic universe, it tied into the greater aspect by having, you know, Claire Temple showed up by talking around Matt, basically, in Daredevil. So, you know, they had the resolution to the main plot. There were still threads to, to later stuff to come in season two. So, you know, I liked it. I liked it for sure. This particular episode, I liked it. It certainly, I don't think it was perfect. I think there was one glaring thing that kind of really bugged me, but we'll get to that.
Oh, I think maybe I figured out what it was. Is it Hogarth?
Well, that's the one thing earlier. The one glaring thing that bugged me was if we want to talk about it now, it's easy to talk about.
I feel like I need to hear what this is before we move forward.
It is the headphones, because like that is a thing where, you know, you think about it early on in the show where it's just like, why don't they just wear headphones, listen to music? Because that seems like the obvious solution. And if they had never, like Robin said it too, if they had never just pretended headphones was never an option, that would have been great. But the fact that Patsy wore the headphones now is just like, well, why the hell didn't you do that from start one? Like, where the hell was that plot point? Like, so it's really bad that they introduced it as like a thing that clearly works pretty well. And it's just like, they just never did it. And it's just like, then that's just stupidity on your parts. Like, why didn't you do that from the get go?
Well, I liked
it. So that was a glaring problem.
I didn't think it was a glaring problem. I can see where you're coming from with that. I think that a piece of it though would be that you kind of want to have one person who can hear clearly being involved as part of like a buddy system with that plan. So yeah, Trish can go and walk into the room with headphones on and she doesn't have to worry too much about hearing anything, but she at least has to have somebody who's going to be her ears in the room. And until recently, we didn't know that Jessica Jones could fulfill that role. We didn't know until fairly recently that she is resistant to Kilgrave's powers. So it really didn't present itself until right now.
I don't know. There's many instances they could have wear earplugs or earphones or something and just like gotten the drop on him with all their caution that they've had before. Like, there, I feel like there's been points where their plotting should have been around that. From like episode one, there should have been a plot. They have been like, okay, well, if the biggest drawback here is that we're all wearing headphones and we might be difficult to hear each other, there's way they organize a secret room that they could lock him in once they, you know, shot him in tranquilizers in the street. I feel like how do we communicate with headphones on would have been a lot simpler. Okay. Is all I'm saying. It's just,
you know, maybe I wasted all of my anger on episode 10, but I don't have it in me to be frustrated about headphones.
It's just the one thing for me that I would like a kind of big problem with this particular episode.
Okay, that's fine. You have your big problem with the headphones, Kevin. I guess I had my problem with Daredevil's costume, and if you want yours to be headphones, then I think that, you know, you can have that. I'll let you have that. How about that?
Fair enough. Yeah, you get Daredevil's costume, I get headphones.
All right. So let's get into the specifics of the episode, and it picks up pretty closely to where we left off last time. Jessica is dealing with Luke. She had shotgunned him in the face. Obviously, he's alive. He's not doing great. He's basically knocked unconscious. No, basically about it. He is straight up knocked unconscious, and she brings him to the hospital where he is going to be attended on by Claire Temple eventually. It takes a little while. First, we see some people who are trying to inject him with needles. It's not working. They try to crack his skull open because they really just need to do it. That doesn't work, and the head doctor's like, oh yeah, that's because this dude has superpowers. That's kind of awkward.
I do like that she was just kind of like, you know, she uses the drill and just like, oh, one of them. And it just kind of like wanders away.
Yeah, what do you mean, one of them?
Yeah, it's just, you know, they're very much establishing that, like, not everyone likes people with superpowers. I mean, this is obviously bleeding into stuff that's been happening in Civil War, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But I do like that Rosario Dawson, like, Claire, you know, comes over. It's just like, you know, in a way she's dealt with this stuff before, but she's still kind of reluctant to be like, and she talks about it later, like, ah, they keep finding me. You know, people with superpowers keep finding me.
I know, she's a magnet for this stuff, just like the soups keep finding her.
Yeah, which, you know, if she's the Agent Coulson of the TV universe, I'm fine with that. I'm all aboard, because I like Rosario Dawson.
I'm fine with that on one condition.
What's that?
Because Agent Coulson is the Agent Coulson of the Marvel Cinematic Universe for Phase 1, and then he's in Avengers, and then he gets killed off, and everyone is upset about it, because he's like, oh, that guy was in all of our movies. We're so sad about that. And so that's, like, a very sad thing. And if they're turning Claire Temple into that character, where they're just, like, going to ice her in the Defenders, I'm going to be pissed. I'm not going to like that. Because where's she going to go? It's not like she can go to a TV show. She's already on a TV show.
This is true.
So, like, you can't kill Claire Temple and have her resurrected on a show. The way
they resurrect her in the Doctor Strange movie, where you know, so it could be like, and it's the reverse where Coulson went from the cinematic to the TV. She's going from the TV to the cinematic. Maybe, I don't know.
Well, I think the problem with that is that actually Night Nurse is going to be a character in the Doctor Strange movie, and
it's someone else.
I believe it's Rachel McAdams is playing that part.
Yeah, correct. I think they did confirm that finally, that she is playing the character.
I don't know if they've confirmed the character, but that's the heavy spec.
Yeah, because she got Katzen. They may not have said who she is yet, but the heavy spec is Night Nurse for her.
All right, so Claire Temple's in the mix here. She does not die here in Jessica Jones, so that's fantastic. Please never die. I really love you, Rosario Dawson, and you are so, so good every time you are in one of these Marvel Netflix shows, and I wish that you'd been here in Jessica Jones the whole time, because you and Jessica seem like you guys would be best friends.
I mean, that would be great if they just become, you know, BFFs. Although that pushes Trish out. So maybe they can be a trio of BFFs.
Maybe they can be a trio of BFFs. There's no reason that they can't all be friends. I feel like she and Trish would get along, too.
Yeah, the bestest is friends forever.
I love when she's like, it's not like I don't know you. I've seen you with your pants off.
Yeah.
That was a great line.
No, they have great banter. I really like it. And, the delivery's fantastic. You have two phenomenal actors on screen together, and of course they're going to be great, you know, playing off each other really well.
Right. So did you think that there was anything to the fact that Claire was really just very super quick to hop on Team Jessica Jones here? It did happen pretty fast.
I mean, she's gone through stuff like, you know, with Matt and stuff like that. So she has a familiarity with this world and like what's happening. So, and you know, she wants to help, and I'm not that surprised by it. It's not like she just got thrown into it, you know, for the first time. And heck, even when she got thrown into it for the first time in Daredevil, she still kind of like leaned in pretty hard onto the superheroics and helping those people, you know?
She didn't always love it, though. Like, remember that time, again, spoiler alert if you haven't seen Daredevil, but you really ought to have seen Daredevil by now. But just very mild spoiler alert. She gets like in trouble with the Russians in that one episode, and it's really not great. And she eventually tells Matt, she's like, I don't really want to be around this stuff, but she's still totally around it. She's totally fine like getting involved in this thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say too, like I'm sure she doesn't want to be around it, but she also wants to, you know, she as a nurse, and you know, she wants to help people, but also like, or one of the reasons she doesn't want to be around Matt is because at that point Matt was clearly on self-destructive path. Matt was, you know, going down a dark turn, so I think that's another reason she didn't want to be around him, is because he wasn't exactly on a positive upswing. He was kind of like on a downward spiral, and you wouldn't want to be around that.
All right, so Jessica sends Claire to take Luke to her place. Meanwhile, she's getting a phone call here at the hospital from Kilgrave, who is now apparently able to use his viral powers on people through airwaves.
Which, see, and this is the thing, like, I would have been fine completely ignoring it, and part of me does ignore this. But, like, because, again, they established this idea that it's a virus, that doesn't make any sense that he can communicate through, like, TV and through speakers. Like, that is not how that works. Like, when you say the word virus, that's what? Like, that doesn't, no. It's just one of those things that I'm just like, why did they say virus so long ago? They should have never said that word. It just makes a lot of illogical stuff that happen here.
It's just super contagious. It's just like, it's so
contagious, yeah. It defies the laws of physics and biology.
Yeah, it's just like the most contagious virus of all time.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, again, it's funny because this bothers me less than the headphones. Because at this point, I was just like, whatever, virus, sure. I guess I just kind of accepted that. The virus thing, I was just kind of like, oh, whatever, and brushed over it. So, funny enough, I'm not as upset about the virus thing and over the TV and the speakers as I am with the phone scene.
Yeah, you know what? The fact that you can laugh at the ridiculousness of that gives me some comfort.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Simpson thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, at that point, you just have to kind of laugh at the ridiculousness of Simpson at times.
Yeah.
So that's where we are here with Virus and me.
What does Kilgrave call her? He comes up with this really creative insult for Jessica Jones. Did you catch this?
I don't. What did he say to her?
They're talking on the phone, and she says, hey, look, we finally have something in common, regret and hatred. And she's like, oh, it's a good thing, you know, that I'm here at the hospital. If you come here, it'll be a short trip for you when I rip your tongue out of your mouth. And he's watching on the monitor, and then he is very exasperated, and he says, you really are an anal crumpet, aren't you?
I must have missed that, because I think when she said the tongue ripping out part, I think I was discussing like, oh my god, is she gonna rip out his tongue? Is that what's gonna, how it's gonna end if she doesn't kill him? Because I was still, you know, maybe she won't kill him thing. I think partway into this, I was just like, yeah, no, he's gonna die. I think it's like, it's gonna happen. But
anal,
that is
anal a, crumpet. Anal that crumpet.
Is a, that is a very British type of, you know, thing, and it's funny because you know, it's the last episode, so I'm gonna do this. You know, the current doctor, you know, played by Peter Capaldi, is known for his creative cursing. And David Tennant played a previous doctor, and he came up with a creative curse here. I feel like there's some kind of parallel that happened.
This feels like a reach, and I'm suddenly starting to know what it feels like when other people get angry when I make Lost references.
Yes, now you know the pain of the Lost references.
Oh, man. Anal crumpet. I was really hung up on that. I had to hit pause. I was like, what did he just say?
Did he just say anal crumpet?
Yeah. I would have gone with butt cronut myself, but, you know, if you want to...
Well, that's the thing. That's the American way of saying it. He's British. He's got to have a little British twist to it by using the word crumpet.
I guess. Anyway, I mean, I know that we could get hung up on the virus thing of it if we really wanted to.
You got hung up on anal crumpets.
Yeah. Let's not get hung up on butt cronuts. Let's not get hung up on the virus thing. Let's just stay away from all of that, and let's just focus on what the effect of it is.
Right. Which is actually pretty cool. Yeah, I have to say,
it was cool if you take yourself away from the fact that this should not work. But the fact that he gets on the loudspeaker, he gets on a monitor and shows a picture of Jessica and says, this woman is patient zero. She's got this virus. It's going to kill everybody in the hospital unless you find and kill her first. And everybody in the hospital is against Jessica, including like this old woman who's in the bed, who's just like doing whatever she can with her like dying
throwing
powers.
Stuff at her, yeah.
Just like throwing like the toilet at her and whatever. So that's fun. I thought that was cool. I like how she goes incognito and blends in and tries to get out, but she still gets stabbed anyway. You know, not a bad stab.
She got sliced, but yeah.
Yeah,
this is between a stab and a slice.
I mean, I guess I was about to say, what's the difference between a stab and a slice? And you would be the expert on this.
Yes, I would be the expert on this.
Yeah. Remember once upon a time, again, not the show, when you and I were recording early on and you cut your finger off in the service of making a croque monsieur sandwich?
Yes, I do. And I like Jessica, powered through because of a good, you know, good nurse and a good doctor that helped me, and then carried on to continue the good fight of doing this podcast.
It feels like such a long time ago that happened.
I know.
How are you doing? I haven't asked you how you're doing. I figure you're just doing fine because you haven't brought it up.
Yeah, no, I'm doing well. The finger seems to be not completely healed. There's definitely still scarring there, but it is that gross phase now where it's like the scar tissue is kind of there and it's like falling and peeling apart slowly.
Oh,
so
blah,
it's kind of disgusting.
Blah.
Yeah, exactly.
Gross. I wish I hadn't asked.
Yeah, that's your own fault. You walked into that one.
That's grosser than the butt cronut.
There's actually a scene in here that I think you probably got freaked out and grossed out by and may not have been able to deal with.
Yep. We'll talk about that for sure.
All right.
That's coming up. Coming soon. Wigglesophobia is revealed. I don't know if I've ever really talked about that on a podcast before. Probably at some point. Anyway, I will today.
Yes.
So all of that said, I thought that was a really cool scene, though, with Jessica kind of trying to get out of the hospital and people turning on her and her wearing the scrubs and everything. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, I really like the fact that she wore the scrubs and the thing, and like she spoke, and that one girl still was just like, wait a second here. Yeah. And like, you know, it did not work as long as they often do in these movies, where people are like, I'm going to sneak away by wearing this outfit. So, you know, like one of the people immediately was just like, I'm suspicious of this,
yeah,
which
I
like a lot.
Yeah, well, she's just like, you look Jessica Jones-ish.
Yeah, it was just like, oh, it is you, it's Jessica Jones.
Jessica Jones, revealed.
Yeah, I thought it was clever on his part, you know, to put up the picture, because if, you know, I think a lesser show would have just had him say like, you know, like kill Jessica Jones and people would have went after her and you wouldn't really blink an eye on that. But then when you really did think about it, you'd be like, how would anyone have known what she looked like? So I like that they actually took they had the fortitude to know, or the foresight to know, put up a picture of her so people could know what she looks like. And I thought that was very clever. And clearly they put some thought into that moment.
Yeah, I thought that was good. All right. I was trying to stall, but let's just get into it.
Yes, let's do it.
Let's get into a thing that I did not care for one bit. I didn't like it. So Claire has taken Luke back to Jessica's apartment. He starts to convulse. she needs to do a thing that will stop him from convulsing. Jessica shows up as Claire is straddling Luke Cage, which was, you know, an awkward thing to walk in on, I'm sure. That was funny. I thought that that was good.
Yeah, no, I thought that was an amusing scene when they walked in. Or when Jessica walked in to see her straddling and it's like, what's going on here? But then, you know, clearly, quickly, Claire, you know, got down to business as she basically, obviously, you know, the force to Luke's head, you know, caught, like you said, his brain's not unbreakable. And that rattled it around. He had swelling in his head and they had to alleviate that pressure. And the only way to do it was to stick a needle through his eye, essentially.
No!
And Josh, as I'm watching that scene, I have it written out, I was like, Josh probably could not have handled this.
All right, so here's the thing, guys. This is something that this is what I always tell people, is that the eye doctor is my dentist. If that makes sense. Does that make sense to you, Kevin?
I understand what you're trying to say. People don't like going to the dentist. Yes. You don't like going to the eye doctor. Yeah. You can't.
I have a fairly strong stomach. Not a ton of things like really, really, really get under my skin and make me really unsettled. But anything with the eyes, it's no good. It's no bueno, as Antonio Mazzara would say. It's really, really tough for me. The most vivid one that I can think of. Kevin, were you with me for Final Destination?
Final Destination 5. I was just going to say that's when I discovered your aversion to eye things because
Wait.
You just turned to me.
Yeah, I need you to tell people this story because I feel like this is a good one.
So like we were sitting there. We got a screening to Final Destination 5. And we were sitting there watching this movie and we were enjoying it for what it was as best as we could. And then there's a scene coming up and
this is in New York. How long ago was this? I don't even remember. This was shortly after you had moved to New York. Yeah.
Yeah. Like maybe 2 or 3 years ago. Gosh.
2011, August 2011.
Wow. Yeah. That was not that long after I moved back to New York. Yeah. But we're watching the movie and as soon as one of the characters, you know, that is destined to die, basically goes to get LASIK eye surgery, Josh was immediately, I just see him squirming, and he just turns to me and just goes, I can't do this. You need to watch this and tell me what happens, and if anything interesting, and tell me when to look again. And I was like, whoa, wow, okay, I did not know this is a thing.
Yeah, you didn't know that. Too. Yeah.
And Josh, legit just curled into, like, a ball almost and covered his eyes so he couldn't see what was happening on the screen. And now the worst part is that, obviously, I'd never seen this movie before, so I didn't know what was happening.
Also, everybody, we're spoiling the outcome of this scene for you if you haven't seen FD5, but obviously this person is not going to survive.
Right. So, like, the whole thing happens, and then at the end, like, I forget exactly what causes it, but it's not even, like, the laser doesn't necessarily, like, murder her immediately, but somehow or another, one of her eyes even flies out of her head and lands on the street, and I thought, as it was sitting there, like, oh, the scene's over, and so, like, as they're about to cut, I was like, okay, you can look now. Josh looks at the screen, and in that moment, a car runs over the eyeball, and poor Josh had to experience that.
Yeah.
But again, I didn't plan that. I didn't know that was going to happen, but yeah, you did. Oh, that was a brutal moment for you to have to look at, and I'm sorry.
The eyeball just exploded as soon as I looked up. I was like, no. And there's even a line here in Jessica Jones where Claire says to Jessica, like, if you puke, he's done. And like, I was like, I would puke. It would be done.
Josh would not be the right person in this scene. It'd be all over for poor Luke Cage.
So that's really my thing. Is like the eye thing really gets to me, and so this was tough. And I didn't think that I was going to be able to watch, but I just pushed through it. And thankfully, they did it. It was like tasteful eye torture porn.
Yeah, they didn't do anything brutal. You didn't really see her, like, injecting it in. I think, again, a certain type of show would really have made it graphic and brutal. But I like the fact that it wasn't too graphic. You know, you see her pulling out the brain juice, I guess. But yeah, again, it was tastefully done. It wasn't something to be like graphic and disgusting, which I can appreciate a lot.
It was gross. It was definitely gross. But I mean, I guess that's how you got to do it if you're Luke Cage and you have a concussion. You got to go through the eyes. Those eyes aren't unbreakable. So
yeah, exactly. You got to find the weak spot.
Options are limited.
Yep.
But that was really gross. And then Jessica, like, immediately needs a drink, even though it's 5 in the morning. And I'm like, you know what? I would be pounding shots with Jessica Jones right now because that was so nasty.
Josh is just there just guzzling alcohol to forget what he just saw.
Yeah. So there's no Daredevil cameo outside of Claire Temple in Jessica Jones. But Claire, like, tempts the, you know, the possibility of a Daredevil cameo. She's like, hey, by the way, I've got a friend who's really good at this kind of stuff, and he's kind of like you. I could call him if you want. And Jessica's like, nah, I need to do this by myself. And I don't know about you, but I was like, no, say yes.
I have three instances in here of just me writing the words, God, I wish. Because there's like, at the very beginning, you know, when they're trying to figure out where to take Luke, I so wish that, you know, Claire would have been like, I know a place, and then gone to Matt's. But of course, Matt would have been like, what are you doing here? Why'd you bring this man to my apartment?
Right.
So obviously it wouldn't happen there. But yeah, this is just like, oh, God, I wish that happened.
Yeah.
And the last instance is, as we'll talk about, the Hogarth scene later on.
Yeah, I just, it would have been nice. It would have been nice. But I mean, I get Jessica's reasoning here. She said,
yeah, I understand.
You know, she's like, at this point, like, I really got to be the one who does this. Like, it's, you know, it's been a while. I really need to satisfy this bloodlust myself.
Yeah, and plus, honestly, if Matt was there, I don't think murder would have been an option for her. I don't think Matt would have allowed it, obviously.
Right.
Which isn't really the smartest move, I guess.
But this is an interesting spot to talk that through. I thought that you brought up something that was kind of a cool comparison, that the journey for Matt Murdock in Daredevil Season 1 is like, can I stop Wilson Fisk without killing him? Can I do this? Am I going to have to kill this guy? And him having to kind of come to grips with his answer to that. And Jessica, throughout much of this series, it's been a similar deal of like, do I have to, like, can I do this without killing somebody? And ultimately we get kind of different answers on this show.
We do. And I think, but though the situations are different, like I remember after, you know, the episode was finished, I was talking to Robin about a lot of stuff and we're talking about the, you know, whether or not she had to kill him. I have to admit, I think this is a circumstance where she had to kill him. The difference with Daredevil too, as Robin herself points out, was that at that end of that, you know, Wilson Fisk, he was a criminal. He was caught by the police. He had just escaped police custody. The only reason Matt Murdock would have had for killing Daredevil at that, or killing Kingpin at that point, would be his own personal ones. It would be his own personal means of just revenge and murder. And that, you know, that was clearly not a good, that would not have been a good choice. He did not have to kill him, and he did it because that was the choice to make. In this particular case, we don't have that. We have, you know, Kilgrave controlling a mass amount of people. He has Trish. He has so many people captive. What's the choice going to end up being? And it's, in a way, she is forced to do it. It is the better way of doing the Man of Steel scene, in a manner of speaking, because Jessica kind of established the fact that she cares about people to a certain extent, definitely cares about Trish, and, you know, kind of almost had a no choice situation. I mean, the comparison is really not even Man of Steel. There's a famous moment in comic books with Wonder Woman where she was kind of backed into a corner of having to do that, and it's a very interesting, powerful moment. And at the end of the day, it was like, yeah, she kind of had to, and I feel like that's where this choice for Jessica had to become. But I do love the fallout, which we can talk about definitely at the end, because I think the way that Jessica sees about what happened and what she did is very different than I think other things could have approached it. But cool. We'll talk about that.
Yeah,
when we get there.
Can't wait to get your take on that. All right, so we go to Kilgrave's. We get a scene at Kilgrave's where his powers are not powerful enough to control Jessica. He's angry with his dad about that, and he wonders, what if you gave me all the powers? What if you give me your full-powered stuff? How will that affect me? What are the odds that I would survive that? And it turns out that it's a 40% chance of making him stronger or a 60% chance of killing him. And Daddy Albert, Papa Kilgrave, is definitely rooting for the 60%.
Definitely rooting for death.
He's rooting for death. But Kilgrave is willing to take the risk. He's willing to take those odds.
He wants power. And it's funny because, you have that scene, like, right after he tells him, he walks out to the balcony, he has this crazy rant.
Do you have this written down? Because I do.
I don't have the exact words written down, but, you know, it's about how he wants her to want him just so he can reject her.
Yeah.
Like, you have the exact words, so definitely read it out because it's bananas.
This is what he says. He says, and he's talking to himself like a total lunatic. He's saying, I'll make her want me. Then I'll reject her and devastate her over and over until she wants to die. I won't give her that either. She'll wither away like someone dying of thirst or starvation. It'll be a special ring of hell designed especially for her. Or maybe I'll just kill her. And that, like, moment where he's just saying that to no audience whatsoever, just by himself out on the balcony, is just like, yeah, this guy needs to get his face ripped off at the end of this thing. If that hadn't already been clear, any sort of, you know, your tenant roguish charm out the window with this guy.
Yeah, he's, you know, he's a crazy person, but it's also, it's so funny because, like, I mean, we talk about, you know, I've talked about this before, we've talked about it on the show about the comparisons they do with this character, and he's a exaggerated version of guys that actually exist, and that is, of course that's a thing. Like, you hear about it, you read about these guys that this idea where it's like, you know, like, oh, you know, it's like that revenge mindset where it's just like, oh, I'll show her. She's going to want me, and then I'm going to reject her, and she'll be so miserable about it. Yeah, that'll teach her. That'll teach her for the way she treated me. Like, that is just so almost like crazy emo teenager response. Like, he's still a child. He's a spoiled child. We've established that. But it really is, like, nailing that mindset and that persona of this type of guy. And you really see that shine on the forefront here of this wrong, disturbed way of thinking. And I love that his options, and by love I mean, ugh, this guy, that his options are either make her more emotionally tortured or just kill her.
Or I'll just kill her.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh, you are a terrible person. Like, you know, like, again, we talked about this before, I think he's the most evil Marvel villain that they've introduced into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, like, hands down.
I mean, there's Thanos out there.
We haven't seen him do anything, really, though.
We haven't seen him do anything, but we can kind of figure that he's probably no good. There's Red Skull, who's, like, a super Nazi. Like, there's...
Again, though, like, I established, like, the Red Skull was, like, he was a nationalist. Like, you know, that was his whole shtick. And,
dude,
again,
do not defend the Nazi when you're talking to a Jew.
I'm not defending the Nazi. To be fair, the Red Skull never said that he didn't like Jewish people or anything.
I thought you were going to say, to be fair, you're only half.
no, I was not going to do that. But he hated Americans more than anything else.
Right. I think that, you know, this Kilgrave is definitely absurdly disturbed and absolutely deranged. And whether or not I would say that he's the most evil, I think that there are contenders for that title out there. But I think that his brand of evil, the type of horror that he can bring into the world, yeah, he's a mind controller and that's unrealistic. But I think the other things about him and what drives him and what motivates him and what he wants, those are terrifyingly real in a way that I don't think that we've gotten from many of the villains in the Marvel Universe. So that's what I would say, is that he might be like the most realistic villain in terms of his motivations and what he wants and how he views the world and how he views how people should be bending to him.
Right. I mean, the thing about him to me that makes him so evil is that he just does this stuff because he can and because he wants and because he doesn't care. He kills people for no particular reason. Like, he just does it because he can do so.
Right.
And the level of, like, again, realistic evil, because that's what serial killers do, that exists there, that I feel like when it comes to motivations and stuff, like, even Loki, you know, has his reasons that, you know, I don't want to say you can sympathize, but you can see, like, you know, his whole background. First of all, he's a god of mischief. He practically can't help half the stuff he does. But, you know, there's levels there where you're just kind of like, okay, you know, this is what they do and this is why they do it. Whereas with Kilgrave, it's just he does it because he's a terrible, evil person. And I think that's what makes him, quote unquote, evil, you know? Like, yeah. he doesn't seem to have that type of, like, logic to him that I feel like the other villains, not that you can attribute to, but explain, like, well, this is why they're out the way they are.
Well, I like this scene contrasted with the very next scene with Jessica lying down with Luke, where we have with Kilgrave this, like, pure guttural admission of awfulness in, like, a private moment where no one can hear him. And we have with Jessica, Luke can't hear anything she's saying. We hear her say, like the sweetest, most, like, personally emotional, openly emotional thing that she has said in this entire series, I feel like, where she says, I thought about you. I mean, I knew it would never happen, but I couldn't help it. Picturing us on an actual date, bowling, normal shit. You're the first person I ever pictured a future with. You're also the first person I've ever shot in the head. If you wake up, I won't be around to screw up your life anymore, probably because I'll be dead, but maybe Kilgrave will be dead too. And by the way, your phone might be what gets me to Kilgrave. You're freaking unconscious and you're still helping me. And then she kisses him on the unconscious mouth and says, I would have liked that future. And I thought that this was such a sweet, tender moment for Jessica Jones that I really wouldn't have expected from Kristen Ritter, who doesn't tend to do that stuff as often as she does the snark. And I thought that she did a beautiful job with this. I thought that she was really great in this scene.
No, she did. She did wonderful in that scene. It was a very emotional scene. And considering at the end, you know, jumping forward a little bit, Luke kind of leaves. It does leave me wondering, like, what happens next. I mean, like, I feel like she's going to have to play a part in in Luke Cage's series. Like, I mean, it would only make sense. It'd be really weird if they just never come in contact again until the Defenders, I guess.
Right.
But I'm hoping, yeah, there's some follow through with this, because it was a really great scene, and I love seeing this relationship develop. You know, I like seeing their relationship as a whole. I mean, again, like, it's there's been more of it recently, but having an interracial couple is a pretty big deal on TV. So I'm kind of happy about when these type of things happen, you know?
Yeah, totally, totally. And they've had great chemistry too, Mike Coulter and Kristen Ritter. I think that Jessica and Luke, we were really looking forward to seeing what that relationship looked like over the course of Jessica Jones season one. And I certainly would say that this show dropped the ball in a few areas. I don't think that this was one of them. I think that they really slam dunked with Jessica and Luke. I used the sports. I think that that was the right way to use the sports.
I'm pretty sure it was, yeah, slam dunk. Or they touched down? No, slam dunk. Slam dunk, yeah.
They touched downs.
They touched downs.
Their downs touched.
That is accurate.
So I thought that all of that was really good, and Jessica's going to get Claire to stick around and keep an eye on Luke, and that's where we have that really fun line where Jessica's like, I know I'm asking a lot about you, or I'm asking a lot of you, and you don't know me, and Claire says, sure I do. I've seen you with your pants down. I thought that was a great, great line read on Rosario Dawson's part, which is, it just really made me feel like, oh man, I wish that Claire Temple was in here. I would watch the Claire Temple show.
Just see her going around, like, and while, like, good shows do phenomenal episodes where you get the perspective of everything from another character's perspective, so to speak. House has a great episode where it's all from Wilson's perspective, and so you see the craziness that normally happens in House, except you see it from, like, his point of view, and it's fascinating and interesting, and it creates this really cool dynamic. Supernatural does an example of that later on. That's actually really cool, where you see someone else's perspective of everything that's happening and how it works, and I really like that. So yeah, I think it'd be cool if they did an episode and you see her interacting with all these various characters from the Marvel universe as she's just going about her normal day. It'd be pretty cool.
I think it'd be cool. I mean, I don't need to have the Claire Temple series, but to have the Claire Temple episode of one of these shows, I think would be cool to see her patching up Jessica, patching up Luke Cage, patching up Matt, maybe Danny Rand. I mean, she could be a cool POV character for the Defenders. Like, she could be the cool character that you, like, kind of see everything through.
I mean, yeah, I think that'd be really awesome. Like you said, I would love to see that episode. Love to see it. Yeah. I'm also really excited now. I mean, you know, this kind of segues, but they made an announcement today as we're recording about a showrunner being picked for Iron Fist. So that show's happening, apparently, so I'm really happy about that.
Yeah, that show is happening. The showrunner that Marvel selected for Iron Fist, I believe his name is Scott Buck.
Yes, who did 6 Feet Under and some Dexter.
Yeah, he did some 6 Feet Under. He did some Dexter, and unfortunately, he did the not-so-great Dexter. So I know that there's a few concerns about, how do we feel about this guy being the guy? But yeah. Listen, Marvel is saying this guy came in with a killer take. Benefit of the doubt, these Netflix shows have been mostly really, really good. So I will, at the very least, be open-minded. I was not a big fan of those final seasons of Dexter, so that does worry me just a touch. But let's see. I mean, casting will be a big deal, too.
Casting's going to be a real big deal for me.
Yeah, casting's going to be a big deal for a lot of people. So let's see how that plays out. Let's see what the story looks like. Let's see how that all goes. That'll be a podcast probably a year from now, maybe a year and a half from now, I would guess. You and I are going to be talking about Iron Fist.
I certainly hope so.
I certainly hope so, too. All right, so let's move on from there. Jessica and Trish are going to track down Kilgrave. They used the phone. They used Luke's phone to back-channel that back to Kilgrave, and they know where Kilgrave is. And so Trish is going to drive Jessica to the penthouse. And before she goes in, Jessica's kind of having this, like, fatalistic conversation with Trish as though she's not going to walk out alive. So I know you came over to the apartment the other day and you were going to tell me a thing. Please tell me now in case you never have another chance. And she's going to let her know about the IGH thing.
Yeah, which, you know, we talked about her tender moment with Luke. I thought this was also a tender moment with her and Trish, that, you know, before she leaves. But she tells her about the IGH thing, which, again, is definitely clearly set up for season two. Yeah, I mean, that's clearly where they're headed with this stuff. Especially since we don't get a follow-up with Simpson at all.
No, so, no Simpson!
Yeah.
I'm so sad.
So, definitely going to end up being season two stuff. But yeah, and you know, I really like that, you know, it was a simple moment for just like something, you know, I never said. And she, you know, as she's living, like, you know, she says like something I never said, like, I love you, which I thought was very sweet and a very Jessica way of saying that, which I really liked.
It made me sad that she had never said I love you to Trish before.
I feel like she has barely said I love you to anyone, especially since she probably was forced to say it to Kilgrave, so I can understand that.
I liked Trish's suggestions for code words. Sardines, pickle juice. Yeah.
Pickle juice.
Pickle juice.
That's, I mean, sardines I think would come up for me a little bit. I do like sardines. Pickle juice, not so much. I like pickles. I don't like pickle juice.
But I don't think that I would say pickle juice most of the time.
It's true. It doesn't really come up in conversation, does it?
I feel like you and I need a signal, like something that we text each other if we're ever in distress and only the other person would know it.
Jeez, I just wanted, you got a dig.
You got just, a dig?
Just a Survivor reference in there. It's like, you got to dig deep.
Yeah, but I would say that probably fairly frequently.
That's true. That's, yeah. Any Survivor reference would be too much from us. Chocolate Skittles.
Chocolate Skittles. Oh, well,
that's something I feel like only a few of us would get. Only you and I certainly would know.
We don't have to go there. We don't have
no,
to go
there. No, we don't.
There. Okay, we could do that. We could do Butt Crumpet. One of those. One of those will do. All right, so
butt cronut.
Yeah, anal crumpet, butt cronut. I'm getting my posterior pastries mixed up. All right,
alliteration.
So Jessica goes in and infiltrates the building, and like right away, it's bad news bears. She sees a guy who is dead on the ground because clearly he injected himself with like Drano or something.
Yup.
It looks like Kilgrave's dad is dead because he's on the ground in a pool of blood with both of his arms sawed off.
I just have the words like, Oh damn. Yeah. Like those are the words I had when I saw that. Just brutal. Poor like, Albert.
That's gross. That's so gross.
But then they cut that, like, that's gross, and then they cut to a grosser moment immediately.
Yeah.
With the guy at the sink, like shoving his arms down the disposal. Oof.
Yeah, he's getting rid of him. He says that Kilgrave told me I had to remove his dad from the face of the earth. You know, this doesn't really count. I mean, what he really should be doing probably is, you know, bringing him to like NASA, right? Like launch him off in, into orbit or something.
You're right. But I feel like to a certain extent, you still have the logic you normally would have about realism, and you wouldn't be like, I need to go to NASA. Just be like, remove him, I will destroy him and dispose of his body in a garbage disposal.
It's sad. I wish that it just made you think bigger. Like, I really gotta shoot him up to the stars.
That's what happened if Kilgrave told you. You'd be like, oh, I gotta go to NASA. Yeah. I gotta get him on a rocket.
Or you have to, like, burn him, like, you know, get him into ashes and bring the ashes up on a hot air balloon really high up in the sky and just, like, throw them around and hope that they burn up or something like that.
I wonder if that would, because, you know, the logic of how, as long as you sort of accomplish it, like, if he wasn't dead and you actually just lifted him up onto an air balloon, you're technically removing him from the face of the earth because you're not on the earth itself. So maybe accomplished?
Is that the Kilgrave cheat? Like, you just have to, like, be more creative than Kilgrave?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's what Jessica does, is she comes up with clever ways to accomplish the goal he told you to do without actually accomplishing said goal. Yeah. But I think that would have been an interesting way of, like, saying, saving poor Albert, if that guy could talk more creatively, is just popping an air balloon and float a little bit upwards. But
yeah,
here we are. Well, instead, we have body parts in this garbage.
Body parts being blended up. But honestly, like, Albert, he's pretty good. Like, the fact that he was able to survive that even for, like, an extra 2 minutes was impressive to me. The fact that he survives long enough to be like, oh, my God, my arms.
Kilgrave, don't...
Yeah, Kilgrave.
Look at him. Don't listen to him. I'm going to die now.
Oh, and my arms are really hurting. Oh, now I'm dead.
Yeah, that would have no useful information delivered. Just, oh, God, my arms. Oh, no. And then dead. Yeah. That would have been awful. That would have been really depressing, honestly.
That would have been the best scene of the series, I think.
Similar to the guy who found the garden, and if he was still alive, just, oh. Yeah.
No.
That would have been pretty spectacular.
Yeah, I feel like that could have been good. All right. So from there, we have a scene. We have a little scene where Malcolm and Claire are talking about, like, how they're always, you know, helping out people with powers, and, like, does that make us sidekicks? And they're like, no, we're not sidekicks, you know, don't use that word.
The hero support is what they are. Hero support.
Hero support. Support staff.
Yeah, that's one of the, I love the movie Sky High, and they're not sidekicks, they're hero support in Sky High, which I really like.
Yeah, I never saw Sky High.
That is, okay, that is a mistake. Sky High, I love that movie. Like, I highly recommend it. There's great performances, but it's also, like, really funny in, like, certain aspects of, like, playing with the superhero genre and just, like, really fun little jokes. Yeah, no, there's great stuff. And I didn't want to say half the jokes. Like, the hero support is just a pretty, you know, like, a pretty obvious joke, but there's a lot of little subtle stuff that I really enjoy. Highly recommend it. If you listen to this podcast, check out Sky High, guys. Okay. I really love that movie.
The Sky High podcast coming next, never.
God, I wish. I actually, you know, I interviewed Danielle Panabaker, who plays Caitlin Snow on Arrow, or on Flash.
Was she in Sky High?
She was in Sky High, and I brought up Sky High to her, and she has very fond memories of that. She loves it, too, and I'm like, I love that movie.
Wow.
I unapologetically love it.
Good for you, Caitlin Snow.
Yeah.
That's great. All right, let's keep moving forward here. We have a scene where Jessica is very angry about Jerry. She yells at Jerry on the phone. We hadn't seen Jerry Hogarth in quite a while. This is our first Jerry sighting in a minute. She was fairly harmless in this episode, though, overall.
Oh, she was harmless, sure. I mean, that scene was fine.
She's actually rather helpful. She bails Jessica out of prison at one point. So, you know, good for you, Jerry.
Yeah, sure. I mean, but that's the scene, too, where, I mean, I like that she called her and be like, you're going to help this guy pro bono. And I like that. Like, I thought that was cool that she did that as a, like, penance thing and sort of where she was like, I'm going to lose my company and I've lost so many things I care about. And I'm still like, yeah, but you're still a terrible person. And as much as, like, yeah, she did the good thing at the end to, like, help Jessica get out of jail, that is the scene where I was like, God, how awesome would it have been, though, if they cut to her and Matt Murdock is just there defending her and then getting her out? Like, that would have been spectacular. But I understand reasons why they didn't.
Yeah, well, you know, they need to establish, you know, for whatever reason, they need to reestablish some sort of loose alliance with Hogarth and Jessica. I mean, I think very loose. Even here in this scene where she's saying, you know, you cannot lose your job. You are, you know, you are who you are. You're this sack of dark oozing shit in an expensive suit, which makes you the best shark in town, and I'm going to need you to save this Kilgrave victim who is about to get charged with murder. And it's not going to make us square, but doing something good really helps with self-loathing. So, like, they're not good, they're not on good terms, but she's, you know, she's at least recognizing the power within Hogarth, and, you know, it must be leading to something. You know, we'll get Hogarth back on the show, either in Defenders or Jessica Jones Season 2, but she's clearly going to be an important character in Jessica's orbit for the future.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens with the character. I'm sure, you know, they want to work towards a redemption thing with her, which, you know, fine, sure. Personally, again, if I was just like, and then we just never saw her, and I'm like, yeah, all right,
yeah,
fine with me, I guess.
Fine
but,
with me.
Yeah.
All right, so here we are. I mean, we're up to the really big climax of the episode, the big showdown that's going to happen here between Jessica and Kilgrave. And I mean, I know that you've got your headphone rant coming up, but I was really thrown off by this. I thought that it was totally Jessica under there. I didn't realize that it's Patsy.
Yeah, I did like that. I was also thrown off. I didn't think it would actually be, you know, Trish / Patsy under there. I do like, you know, we got the, like, it's Patsy reference. Which, you know, God, the headphones thing aside, that is a point too where Jessica also should have been wearing headphones and, like, maybe could have gotten a drop on him. But, like, that was also weird because they set it up so Patsy could be there, but then Jessica didn't move fast enough, I guess, because then they pretty opened fire pretty quickly. So, like, she wasn't even able to get to him as fast as she probably would have liked.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it all kind of goes to hell, the plan.
Yeah, it does.
Because Kilgrave has an army of cops that he's just able to unleash on Jessica and Trish. It could have ended very, very poorly.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Jessica did, like, she didn't fly, but she landed with style.
Well, we did call this shot once upon a time. We're like, she's going to fly in the finale and it's going to be great. And she flew better sooner than that. But this really was just like a really, you know, solid jump.
Yeah, this was just which was kind of surprising. I thought they'd do a flying thing, but she did jump. She got over to where Kilgrave, you know, escaped from. But then runs out to more trouble.
Yeah, runs out to more trouble. Kilgrave is trying to get away by yacht. Did you catch what the yacht's name was?
Goldfish.
Can you explain why that is a thing for people?
Is that a thing? I missed this entire...
Oh, you missed a thing. Goldfish is a Brian Michael Bendis comic book.
Oh, my gosh, that's right. That was, like, his first, like, indie comic way back in the day, wasn't it? Like, that was his first big comic, I think.
Brian Michael Bendis, the guy who wrote Alias, which was what Jessica Jones is based on. Yeah. He's obviously a prolific Marvel Comics writer who writes, you know, almost... It feels like almost all of the main events that Marvel ever puts out, or many of them, at least. That boat,
a lot of really good ones, for
that
sure.
That boat was called Goldfish, which was a nod to one of his early graphic novels.
Yeah,
so
that's like, yeah, now that you said, I'm like, oh, that's right. That's like what I think that's like his first big comic work. That's kind of got him on the map, which is that I like that. That's really sweet.
Yeah, I thought that was a nice little wink and nod to one of the guys who's really responsible for this show even existing.
Yeah, for sure.
So talk me through the final confrontation between Kilgrave and Jessica. We have Kilgrave. He's ordering all of these people to kill each other as a distraction. It's getting very violent. Jessica's kind of just like moving through the crowd, doing everything she can to get to Kilgrave first. And he eventually just calls for everybody to stop moving. And Jessica stops. And we find out that she's faking it, but in the moment, you're not sure if she is under Kilgrave's spell or not. To the point that even Kilgrave is, you know, he's questioning it out loud as well. He's saying like, oh, don't insult my intelligence. You're faking this. This is all a clever plan that you're just pretending to give me what I want. And oh man, this is so tempting. I really want to believe you, but I just don't buy it. I what did you think of this? Did you like how this all played out?
Well, it's interesting, right? So the first thing I have to say, again, the cleverness of Kilgrave, I think, extends to a very nice degree. I think having the people not attack Jessica, but have them attacking each other was very smart, because that is something that Jessica has to kind of help separate them rather than just go for him. So it was kind of meant as a distraction on his part. He was kind of seeing like what she would do in that situation. Whereas if it was just, oh, get her, then she just kind of really would just plow through them. And to a certain extent, she still did anyway, but it was still pulling people off as best as she could as she went to him. As for how it all, shook out, it's funny. I've talked to actually like one or two people, between the time of obviously Robin, between us recording to get their take. One of my friends was kind of like, I didn't like how he, how he fell for that. Like, right. Why would he fall for that? In my opinion, it made sense. Like, I like that he was reluctant at first, that he was like, oh, you're faking it, because anyone in that situation would assume that she's faking it. And like, he's pushing her to this extreme. He has Trish, he's gonna walk away with Trish, he has Trish like making out with him,
which was
and
such a not, just disgusting. It was so gross.
It was gross. It was super awful. Gross. And awful. I think that was the point, is that he really wanted to make it like terrible and awful. And when Jessica's still not reacting, and when Jessica has that tear, in his mind, it's like, oh man. Because I think this is a guy who always gets what he wants. He's a spoiled brat, and he has such an ego on him, and yes. He just thinks so highly of himself and his own power and his own worth, that I believe that he would be delusional enough to believe, oh my God, I did it. I did it. I got her. Because that's his weakness in the end of the day, is that ego of his and this high self-worth that he has. So I honestly do believe that he in that moment would have been, dumb enough, so to speak, to believe that he actually did it, because that's just his character. That is how warped he always is, that he gets what he wants always. So, he has that scene where he walks over to her and he's so, happy about it. And then she, what is it he says to her? Like, let's see that smile, right?
Yeah. And this is what I said, was like, I want her to say smile back at him and knock his head off. And she basically did that.
Yeah, you got your wish. You pretty much predicted the ending of this.
I feel like I should get a bonus beer.
What? We'll see. On
all
that.
Right. Please hashtag bonus beer if you guys agree that I should get a bonus beer. A second beer. Hashtag bonus beer if you guys think that I should get a bonus beer from Kevin.
In which case, if there is enough, I, of course, will buy you a bonus beer.
Oh, that's great. Please, guys, everyone, hashtag bonus beer. Tweet that at Kev Mahadeo. Make him buy me drinks.
I have a job now. I can do these things.
I think that that's all a good point. And I think that the other part of it is that, Kilgrave is impulsive and bratty and used to getting his way, so he would fall for the thing. But he also has reason to believe that obviously Jessica would be under his spell, because Jessica a knock against her is that she's really impulsive and hot-headed and fierce and, punches first and asks questions later a lot of the time. And if he was really pushing her to this emotional extreme and she was not under his control, then, she would probably snap. She would probably break. Really, there's a telling line that we kind of glossed over earlier in the episode when Jessica and Trish are in the car, and Jessica says to Trish, like, you have an iron will. Please hold on to that for for me. Like, you really just have this resolve. And I think that Jessica borrows some of that in this scene where she's really just steeling herself because she's like, I am so close. I am right here. If I really just play this super cool, I think that I can get him close enough that I can snap his neck, and it will be so good. It will be, it will feel so nice. So she, you know, exerts this new kind of power that she doesn't really seemingly have within her for much of this show, which is just like this iron-willed resolve of just like stick to the plan, stay cool, stay calm, and let the thing happen. And that feels very counter to a lot of like the real fire and fury that seems to well up in Jessica so often.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we see, you know, both of these things at play. Like you said, you see this resolve in her part, and you see him, who's so convinced he's so good at manipulating her. He's manipulated, or he's tried to manipulate her, and to a certain extent manipulated her a number of times throughout the season. So there's, again, a guy who's so convinced that he's able to manipulate her, that he does believe she is weak-willed. He doesn't think highly of her, I think, at the end of the day. And again, because of his personality, because of what and who he is. So he would think that he would be stronger than her, that he would in that moment have dominated her, and she probably would not have had enough willpower to stop it, because that's what he believes and that's how he sees her. To a certain extent, like you said, I think that she has shown that she doesn't have great willpower, but in this moment she really needed it, and she succeeded in that. She beat him out basically in a test of willpower and, you know, manipulation.
Yeah, it was great. It was really cool.
She grabs him by the mouth. I do like that a lot.
Yeah, I love it, because it's just like, shut up, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, she just shuts him up, and she cracks his neck and gives him the, you know, the good old Superman, or the Wonder Woman, as you phrased it. And yeah, she just, you know, treats him like General Zod and just snaps that thing right off, pretty much.
It was
great. Yeah. Very satisfying like, to finally see this guy go down. It was great.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about whether or not, and it's funny because, you know, I have my opinions about whether or not superheroes should kill, and I always think it depends on the superhero, it depends on the universe.
But
I think
Jessica's defense, she's not a superhero. She was a sandwich.
Yeah, she was a stupid sandwich. She was a sandwich that saved all these people. As we're leading out here, you know, we can talk about it, but I think that the resolution was very strong in that she did this thing. She was arrested. I think Jessica fully intended to go to jail to pay for what she feels is a crime she committed, but she gets off, she gets free. And Jessica doesn't see herself as a hero. And I think that's very interesting because, you know, she killed this guy. She doesn't see herself as a hero where other people are definitely seeing her as a hero. And I kind of like this establishment in a way of like, the character themselves, but like murder maybe not being the answer, even if she's forced into it. I like that she's feeling this guilt. She's not feeling happy about the resolution. You know what I mean? Like she's still affected by all this stuff that happened to her.
I don't know. Obviously she's affected.
Right.
And I don't know if I would say she's happy about it either, but I do think that she feels like she did the right thing. But I also think that
she did the right thing, but doing the right thing doesn't always mean that, you know, you have to feel glad about it, you know?
Right. But I think that there's a feeling on her part that she, you know, she did what she had to do. She did the right thing here and she's not thrilled about it, but she'll live with the consequences of it. Like she saved lots of lives and it did not exactly wipe out the red from her ledger as someone else in the Marvel universe might say, but she, you know, she at least, she got the guy that got Hope Schlottman, you know, she got the guy that got Reva, you know, she took care of the person who was responsible for this, you know, overflowing closet filled with skeletons in her past. And I think that she's, you know, taking some solace in that. And if she goes to jail for it, she goes to jail for it. Hogarth ends up getting her out of jail and, you know, she goes home and she goes back to Alias Investigations and her phone is blowing up, you know, it's calling off the hook. She's got all these voicemails from people who want her help, from people like, are you the Jessica Jones that did that awesome thing? I'm going through a real tough thing right now. I really need your help. And she's deleting because I think that you're right. I think that she doesn't view herself as a hero. I think that she, you know, she views herself as somebody who just did the thing that was the right thing to do, but not the heroic thing to do. And I'm not worthy of being, you know, these people's heroes. But I think that it goes back to something that she says to Hogarth earlier in the episode, which is, you know, doing something good isn't going to redeem you, but it'll help with your self-loathing. And I think that that's what's cool about when Malcolm picks up the phone at the end of the thing and is basically like forcing the Alias Investigations thing to continue, because it's like, you might not want to do this, but you're good at doing it, and I feel like it will make you feel better. And this is coming from Malcolm, who is somebody who has been through the Kilgraving process himself, has been through his fair share of darkness, had been encouraging Jessica throughout this series to really seek the help of the support group. She never really did. And I really like that final image of him hanging out with her there and picking up the phone and being there for her and putting her in a position where she is going to be helping more people moving forward. I thought it was a cool ending for the show.
No, I agree. I really like that ending. Like I said, I like that, you know, we're seeing her affected. We're seeing her own take on this stuff, which is interesting. You know, we talked about it before, but I do like the contrast of even if you're, you know, she did the right thing. But the effect of it, the effect of feeling something about it and being like not completely, okay with yourself, I think is important as far as like a character and heroism thing goes, you know. That was one of the things with Man of Steel is just like, I actually did not hate the fact that that happened with Zod, but what I wasn't thrilled about is that 2 seconds later, he's just kind of like quipping with the army general and being like all fun and jokey. And I'm like, that's it. You did this thing and now you just don't even care. Like, that's not how he should be feeling in that moment afterwards. So, you know, I think that that's the contrast here between how a hero should be feeling versus not correct behavior for a hero, you know,
yeah.
Which the irony of Superman not being correct behavior for a hero, but here we are.
Yeah.
So I really did like the ending. Like you said, I liked that resolution. I wish Matt Murdock showed up to get her off, but fine. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, that would've been cool. That would have been awesome, but we'll get our Jessica Jones and Matt Murdock team up. Sure. Shortly enough, you know, whenever Defenders pops, that'll happen. So that'll be great. And then just a couple of things that are left hanging in the air, I guess is Trish. She's looking into the IGH thing. So I think you're right. I think IGH will be a focus of the next season. We don't know what's up with Simpson. Simpson is still out there. That's a thing. But the Kilgrave story is completely resolved, unless you could see any way for them to utilize David Tennant moving forward, whether or not, like, is he still going to be, you know, haunting her? Will she have a new kind of post-trauma to deal with in a future season? I gotta imagine that you would at least have some sort of flashback with Kilgrave. You wouldn't do season 2 and not show his face at all, but do you think that there's any major story to tell with this character whatsoever anymore, or do you think that that's completely done, and how do you feel about the resolution?
Whether or not David Tennant shows up again, I think is debatable. It is difficult to pin down David Tennant and have him commit to multiple things like that. He is a busy man. I think Kilgrave will still be a presence for sure. I think IGH is going to be playing a big part, and I do feel like the origins to a certain extent of Luke and Jessica and Kilgrave are connected. So I feel like in some way Kilgrave's presence will be felt. He will be brought up. He will be talked about. Whether or not David Tennant is there at all, whether or not David Tennant will be involved in flashbacks, or they'll be flashing back to when they were younger, I think that's more likely. I find it hard to believe that David Tennant himself might be back.
And so how do you feel about the ending of the Kilgrave story? How do you feel about the way that he goes out, what that means for the season that we just watched, how that impacts the themes of everything we were seeing? Are you happy with the way that they closed out that story?
I am happy with the way they closed out that story. I mean, you know, there's a lot of levels here and a lot of things to talk about, and I feel like that's good for any show, is to have things to be discussed afterwards. I mean, we have basically this person who was, you know, a victim fighting back and taking out the person who was the cause of this, you know, this monster, and like, you know, killing him basically. But at the same time, like, at the end of the day, did that make her, you know, feel better completely? Is she happy now? Does that resolve everything? And to a certain extent, no, it didn't. And, you know, there's lots of ways to talk about that and resolve it and think about it and deal with it. But I do kind of like that idea. I mean, you know, it's a weird example, but in Batman, you know, I'm not happy about referencing it, but in Batman Forever, there's a line where Batman talks about, you know, you go after a person who killed your parents, you know, that's his whole thing. But you go after this person, but then there's another person, and there's another person, and there's another person, and there's another person. It becomes this endless cycle that you're stuck in, you know, that doing, you know, getting revenge isn't going to completely solve the problem. It's not going to make you feel like everything is fine.
That you were about to reference, I'll get drive-through.
That is actually Batman Returns. Thank you very much.
That's not Batman Returns.
That wasn't Batman Forever, was it?
I'm pretty sure that's a Val Kilmer.
Are you sure? I thought that was Michael Keaton.
Nah, Michael Keaton wouldn't be caught dead. He cares about Batman way too much.
You might be right. Yeah. But no, I would not reference that. That's not great.
Didn't I make a Batman and Robin reference once upon a time? Again,
you
not
did.
The show. Not the
you
show.
Did. You did make a Batman and Robin reference.
We're
that
coming,
is far worse, though.
We're coming full circle. Anyway, I'm interrupting you. Continue.
No, but that's fine. I mean, like, what my point is that I kind of like that there's no definitive answer here about what the resolution of something like this could be. That this that having something like that happen to you, that having this type of trauma, like having, you know, this happen, you're never going to be fully okay. But it gets better. You know what I mean? I feel like that's kind of where it's at. And, you know, it's difficult to talk about and to really slot down, like, this is the answer to this. But I like that it kind of left it in an interesting way and not just like, yep, everything's fine now. Her life is totally normal and happy. Because, like, you know, it does take time and it takes more to get through something like that. And so I like that the show ended this way. I like that storyline ended this way. I'm fine with her killing him, honestly. Like I said, I think it depends on the character. You know, someone criticized one of our listeners, who, you know, I had a disagreement with about a character on Gotham who did something, that I don't agree with. I think it all boils down to who the character is and what the character is. And I think with Jessica, this makes sense for the character. This is something that I think works for the character. Whereas for another character, necessarily, it won't. You know, like, killing someone isn't the right answer.
Right.
Like, for Daredevil, for example, I don't think killing is the right answer for him as a character.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, anyway, long, rambly answer for that. I like the resolution. I like the end of the Kilgrave story. I'm sad to see David Tennant go, but I'm glad that they had a resolution that I'm happy with.
I agree completely with that. All right. Jessica Jones, season one, in the books. What's the final takeaway? I mean, I'm looking around. We're at that time of year where people are writing up their best of 2015 types of lists and stories and, you know, coming together with, like, what were the best shows of the year? Which shows really knocked our socks off? And I'm seeing Jessica Jones hitting the mark for a ton of people. Does Jessica Jones hit that mark for you? Do you think that this is one of the best shows that you saw in 2015? And if you want to shrink it down to a smaller scale and pit Jessica Jones against Daredevil, based on the one season of each that we saw,
right,
which one comes out on top for you?
It's funny. I had a whole thing with Robin last night about this. But at the end of the day, Daredevil wins out for me as a show. I do think Jessica Jones is definitely one of the best shows of 2015. Definitely agree there. I think Jessica Jones is a great show and a very powerful show. I think it was a very important show. That kind of address a lot of important issues. So I, you know, on the ranking, the large scale ranking, for sure, I think people saying that Jessica Jones is one of the best shows of the year, I could wholeheartedly agree with. Thinking of the year, there's not a lot of great shows. Not saying that diminishes Jessica Jones, you know, in any way. I think she still would stand on top, even if they were a lot of really good shows. But that's the thing that makes it so good, is that it stands out. Like, I'm thinking of other shows, I can't even really think of other really good ones, because comparing it, you know, comparing Jessica Jones to other shows, Jessica clearly comes out on top, in my opinion.
Wow. Big words.
Yeah. But that said, I at the end of the day, for small scaling, it's a Daredevil versus Jessica Jones. For me, Daredevil.
Yeah, I think that Daredevil wins for me. I think that Daredevil was more consistent. I think that Daredevil, I didn't love the finale of Daredevil, but I loved pretty much everything else. I really loved those performances. I loved those characters. Wilson Fisk was transcendent. So I thought that there was a ton, just it was more consistent on Daredevil. And I think that Jessica Jones was getting close to taking the title for me between the two, and in really episode 10 did take a turn for me, and it became a little hard for me to take the show as seriously as I had been taking it from that moment forward. And I don't know if that's fair. If I were to give it another watch, would I go easier on it? I don't know, but that episode really just knocked me for a loop, and I don't think that I ever fully recovered from it. I think that this was a great show. I think that the performances were really top notch. I think that Kristen Ritter, especially as Jessica, was so great and really funny and touching and sarcastic and sardonic and just a really great character and a really great lead for this show. So I was really thrilled with what she did. David Tennant, appropriately creepy and loathsome and awful. And yeah, there were times you're like, oh man, but he's so charming. And you catch yourself, you're like, no! No!
Yeah, and so, you hate yourself when you're thinking about that stuff, you know, with Tennant.
Yeah, so it definitely made you feel things. And the themes were really powerful. And,
yes.
And, you know, dealing with some of this stuff on a Marvel superhero show, let alone a show about superpowers of any kind, you know, talking about rape and assault and trauma the way that this show did was really frank and unexpected for me. You know, having not read the Alias comic books that this is based on, I don't know how deep things go with those. But with the show, they really went there. And I thought that they did a really good, mature, responsible way of telling those stories. So I think that the great stuff was really, really great. But the bad stuff was pretty bad for me. And that's going to knock it below Daredevil. And I don't think that I would have it on my list of best shows of 2015. I think that it was really, really solid. And I had a really fun time with it. But I think that just that final act stumbled enough that it would probably not make the cut for me. I think that there's a few other shows that would probably rise above that. But that being said, I had a blast with it. I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do with the character moving forward in Marvel, whether or not she gets a season two of Jessica Jones, or if she, you know, her next appearance is Luke Cage, or if she shows up on Daredevil, or if it's just the Defenders. I really can't wait to see what Marvel does with Jessica. And I'm just psyched. I thought that the Marvel Netflix stuff has been pretty consistent so far. A little uneven here in Jessica Jones, but more hit than miss by a lot. And I really am I'm stoked to see what they do with Daredevil season two, which should be coming up soon, and then Luke Cage pretty shortly after that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like you said, I'm with you to a certain extent. I still think it's one of the best shows, but I do agree that, you know, there's parts that did stumble. Specifically, I think it's little things. I think what you said is 100%, and that the performances especially were phenomenal. Like, you know, both shows, I think Daredevil and Jessica especially had such great, powerful performance from every actor on the screen. I think they did a great job. I think the themes they dealt with was incredible and mature. And I remember when we first talked about this, and we talked about, like, oh, there's a thing that happens in the comics with Jessica Jones, and if they're going to do it here. And I was, when it was the rape stuff, and I was worried about them honestly doing it because of, you know, TV and especially comics have a history of not dealing with that stuff well, but the way they dealt with it and the way they did this really blew me out of the water. Like, I'm glad they did it because they handled it so fantastically. So definitely, you know, giving it major, you know, credit there and for what it did with dealing with that stuff. For me, the stumbling, like, episode 10 was majorly problematic, but I feel like that stuff that could have been resolved. Like, Robin and I were also talking about this, you know, like Abe Simpson's storyline. Robin said it, she's 100% right, should have ended with that bomb explosion. He should have died in that bomb explosion.
Yes.
For a number of reasons. One, that I think that, like, that's a proper character arc for him. We had a guy who was Kilgrave, and we see the effects of being Kilgrave from this guy's perspective, of how he becomes obsessed with him, and how he wants to murder him about his decisions, and his downward spiral, and how Kilgrave has affected him and led to this bad thing happening.
Right.
And I think that would have been an amazing character arc. Also, the problem with what happened in episode 10, as Robin points out, is that, are you telling me that Kilgrave coincidentally picked the one cop who also was involved in this program that involved these drugs? Like, what are the chances of that?
I was thinking about that earlier. Yeah. Too. Like, of all the cops in New York. Yeah,
exactly. So, you know, there's that. And Robin also called this out, which is accurate. This is funny because we had a discussion about this one, and it plays into something I don't like, but explains it. So, we theorized about why Jessica broke from Kilgrave's power, right? And my original theory was that she was forced to do something that was inherently that she, you know, as a moral person, she couldn't do. One, she killed Kilgrave, so possibly that's wrong. But also, Rob points out, but what about other people? We had a guy fall on garden shears. Are you telling me that a person was willing to do that? That everyone who killed themselves in the show is possibly suicidal? You know, like, people do things like that are like, how is that a thing that they're able to do? And I came up with an answer about what it really is, and I think what it is because they established that Kilgrave is a virus, and he did it to Jessica for so long, she built up an immunity to it, I think is what happened. Like, because it's a virus, and because she was infected for so long, she was able to build up this resistance. And maybe that is why they had a virus theory for him. I don't agree with the virus thing. I think that's another thing that I'm very, like, not happy with the show. But again, overall, those are nitpicky stuff, you know, and I feel like not super nitpicky. There's some stumbling blocks. But overall, I think the show, because of what it did and how it handled character and, you know, especially female characters on television is really important. And the themes they did, I think, it, for me, it wins out. I mean, I don't know what you've been watching, but maybe I've not been watching the shows you've been watching.
I've been watching some good stuff. I've been watching some good stuff. You need to catch up on The Leftovers. I know you're not going to.
I know everyone keeps talking about The Leftovers, but I don't know. We'll see. We'll see on that one.
Yeah. But no, I mean, we could argue this back and forth. I think that it was really, really solid. I just think that there were some things in there that I still have to get over. I still have to get over. And granted, I also said this at episode 11, that the great stuff that we got with Simpson there made me laugh so hard that it was almost worth it.
You'll be getting more of him in season two, probably. So here we are.
One can only hope. Either that or we just get Netflix's nuke. You know, we just get the full blown nuke show would be really good.
That would be a weird. I would watch that single episode, to be honest.
All right, Kevin. I think that's going to wrap it, unless you got anything else about Jessica Jones you want to get off your chest.
Only thing is, in this episode, I like when his dad injected him. He had the purple veins. I thought that was a nice little nod to the Purple Man.
That was cool.
I thought that was a nice little touch on their part.
I like that. He never went full-blown Purple Man, which would have been a thing.
It would have been interesting. but at least they gave a nod to it. At least they gave something where there was some purple in him.
Yeah. All right. So, Kevin, let's go with hashtag bonus beer because I want a beer.
Not butt Corona.
No. Oh, butt Corona. That was good too. So if you dare to give us some hashtag butt Cronuts, you can throw those our way as well. Also, just wanted to hashtag high five Kevin. Kevin, you did such a solid job here on Jessica Jones. It was really fun podcasting. Really great talking to you about this stuff. You know, you're a great friend of mine. Really fun to have you in the post show recaps community. I've heard nothing but positive responses from people about this stuff. So really, really fun to have you along for the ride. Daredevil was a great time. This was really fun. I'm really glad we were able to do every single episode. We're no promises of any kind of feedback show this time.
We're
being realistic. I think that this is it. But this was a really great ride, and I would be surprised if this is the end of Kevin on Post Show Recaps. I'm sure we'll hear more from you soon.
I hope so. And, you know, thanks for having me. I'm glad for the positive feedback from everyone. Thank you so much. And you make me blush.
Wow. Well, that's it. That's going to do it here for us on the Jessica Jones podcast. Thank you, everybody who has listened along, all you binging billies out there, and everybody who had been keeping pace with us as well. Whoever you are, if you guys made it to the end of this thing, we just appreciate that very much. So from both at Kev Mahadeo and at Round Howard, a hearty thanks to you guys. And we will talk to you again, hopefully very, very soon, about other stuff. Take care, Kevin. Goodbye.
Goodbye forever.
Goodbye, friend. Bye.
Bye, buddy.